It's just good to be able to study together. We do have slides tonight. This study is not always easy to do it. Sometimes the very nature of what we're studying and the background we're trying to give is that, but you'll see one of the reasons we give this, because there are some things that we want to look at, don't want to spend a lot of time there. But now, I need somebody that is real good with their cell phone and that could tell me the price of gold. I believe the price of gold is $5,000 per ounce. Is that about right? Is it more than that? I mean, you bought any gold lately? $5,000 per ounce. All right. Now, and there are 16 ounces in a pound. How much is a pound of gold? You got that? And you need your calculator in just a minute, because I'm going to give you some other numbers to multiply it by. We're going to figure out what a ton of gold is worth. And then we'll give another and multiply it again by a certain number of tons. And we just need somebody that's pretty good. Now, Chuck Reeves was here last week, and he was sitting up here, and I was intended to do this last week. And we ran out of time, so we're going to do it again this week. And if you're good with your calculator, then $5,000 per ounce times 16 ounces in a pound. I think that is 80,000. Is that right? Is that close enough? So I was doing that math in your head. That's amazing. And so, all right, let's get with it. I want us to talk about the greatness of Solomon in reference to his grandeur. This is more some material we've already covered, but I want you to understand something about it. Solomon's reigned over all the kingdoms. Now, you got a map inside your head. From the river, Euphrates River, up to Iran and Iraq, right? Way up to there, when you look at the news tonight, all the way down through the land of the Philistines and all the way down to Egypt. So whenever you see all that on the news tonight about all the activity there, you got to understand, yeah, Solomon was in charge of all of that. And they served Solomon all of his days. And the provision for one day, this is what he had for lunch. For the three meals during the day, 30 measures of flour, 80 measures of meal, 10 oxen, 10 fat oxen, 20 oxen out of the pastures, and 100 sheep, besides hart and roebucks and fallow deers and fatted fowls. And we read that, and it doesn't mean a thing to us. And so down below that, I want in that different color, you see the last three words down there, the Bible for the deaf. You see that? It's called the ERV, and it's written about a third grade level. And so several years ago, I'm talking probably, maybe 35 years ago, maybe further back than that, there are some brethren that said, we don't have a Bible simple enough for the deaf. And so it was called the Deaf Bible, or Bible for the Deaf. And people got it, and they really, really liked it. And so they changed the name of it to Easy to Read Version of the Bible. It's called the ERV, and you can download that for free. And I use it every time for a quick reference. Why? Because I don't know how big that measure of flour is, you see, and I don't understand it. So down at the bottom of that, and here it is in simple English. But before we read that, let me mention to you, I bought this for my great-grandchildren. I want them to read the Bible. And when they're learning to read, they get second or third grade, you can give them their own Bible, and they're able to sit down and study it and read it and understand it. This is the ERV, needed each day for himself and everyone who was at his table. 150 bushels of fine flour and 300 bushels of flour. How much bread would that make? You think of a bushel now, like a bushel basket of apples, you know, that's a measure, and that's what it is. But that's 450 baskets of flowers, and so 450 bushels. That's a lot. Now, see, you read the King James, 30 measures doesn't impress you. Wait a minute. And then in addition to that, they had 10 cattle that were fed grain, 20 cattle that were raised in the fields, 100 sheep, and animals. How many times, what kind of meat you have? Well, they had these two different kinds of cattle meat. And then they had wild animals, deer, gazelles, roebucks, and game birds. Every day. That is impressive to me. And so whenever we start talking about the grandeur of Solomon, I want you to understand that he was a wise, wise man, and we need to understand that, but he was a rich, rich man. Can you imagine that? How many of the people that take to cook all of that food and everything? And how big is that table? That's the next thing I got to thinking about. I mean, and I understand that they didn't all have to sit at the same table. But you stop and think about consuming 30 sides of beef. But you got both sides, so it's 60 sides of beef. You got a grill to cook all that on? You got a way to provide all of that, and then deer and roebuck and all of these other things. We don't stay there long, just want you to look at it and everything. And you've got the ERV. You likely can download it. If you've got a smartphone and you've got a Bible program, if you don't have a Bible program, there's a free one. It's one I use all the time. It's called E-Sword. And it is, it's amazing. Right here, I've got 70 books that I use for reference all the time, right here in Miami, and I got every one of them off of eSword. So you've got all of that. It's got 75, maybe 100 Bible in 100 languages and everything. So if you meet somebody that you can just let them read that in their own language. Okay. Now, look at the next verse 26, 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariot. How many horses you got? How'd you like to try to feed these things? 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariot and 12,000 horsemen. These governors, each man in his month, provided food for Solomon and all that came to King Solomon's table. There was no lack of supply. So every month, the food was provided. They brought barley and straw to the proper place for the horses and the steeds, every man according to his charge. And God gave Solomon wisdom. And so that's a part of his wisdom. Now, whenever the two women, both of them had children, and one of them, baby died. You remember that story? I think we talked about this last week. Solomon figured out immediately because they switched babies. One had the dead baby in the night, gave the dead baby to her friend, and took the live baby. So the next morning, your baby's dead. Then, this is not my baby. Yes, it is. You know, I've got my baby here. And so this, and they bring it to Solomon, and the wisdom of Solomon. Isn't this amazing? Do you know a little 6 or 7 year old kid can understand this? I want you to understand how wise this is. And the amazing thing is, a kid can be able to figure it out. I mean, you can present that, talking to your grandchildren about the Bible. So let me tell you something happened one time. And what's the best way to decide? And so Solomon said, give me a knife and we'll chop it in half. That'll solve it. That's a good way to solve this problem. And one of the women said, get the knife. And the other one said, no, let her have the baby so the baby can live. Which one of those women is the mother of that baby? You know, that's an amazing thing. I didn't want that to ring, and I don't know who's calling me. Anyway, look as we continue to read this. God gave Solomon wisdom and exceedingly great understanding and largeness of heart like the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the men of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. Solomon's wisdom exceeded that. I've got that same verse down on the next slide of the wisdom of Egypt. Look at verse 31. He was wiser than any man. No, it doesn't say that. Isn't that amazing? Difference in any man and all men. Put all the wisdom of all that man can, and he was wiser than all the men, and he mentioned several of them by name, and his fame was in the surrounding nation. Solomon wrote Proverbs. We don't have them all. I sometimes would like to know what he said about some of these things, but it helps you understand how big Solomon's world was. God gave him wisdom. Now the Lord said, you ask whatever you want, I'll give it to you. And he could have asked for fame, he could have asked for power, he could have asked for riches, and he said, just give me wisdom. I'm a young man and I've got to rule over these people. Give me wisdom. He spoke 3,000 proverbs and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees from the cedars of Lebanon. I think that's probably refers to Lebanon. Even down to the hyssops that spring out of the wall, he spoke of animals, of birds, of creeping things, and of fish, and men of all nations came from everywhere to hear the wisdom of Solomon. I'm telling you, if there ever was a time whenever they make the seven wonders of the ancient world, I cannot even halfway begin to think about the Parthenon and Greek culture compared to what we're just reading right here. The grandeur of this king. And so we got a description of the temple, and we're not going to look at that. All right, let's see this. The weight of gold, the next slide, 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 14. The weight of the gold that came to Solomon every year was 666 talents of gold. You know what the Bible says? You know what the ERV says? Every year he received 25 tons of gold. So you take your 80,000, and that tells you what 1 pound of gold is worth. Multiply that by 2,000. And somebody's going to have to help me. It's 160 and add 6 zeros to it or something like that. Is that 1,600,000? Something. You tell me. You've got the calculator. I'm trying to do this in my head, and it's not coming out. 80,000, that's what a pound of gold is worth. 2,000 pounds, 1 ton, would be worth what? Is it 1.6? Am I right? 160 million. Huh? Anybody got a calculator? You know how to use your smartphone. Is this smarter than you? Now multiply that by 25. Because you got 25 tons. So a ton of gold's worth $1.5 million. And 25 times 1.5 million is 25 million plus. Oh, I've lost it. Okay. You know how much that is? 37
million.
How much gold you got? Isn't that amazing? We buy it by the ounce, you know. You've got they got these little gold chains, you know, and your husband spends a lot of money to get you the good little gold chain, you know, and you get it. And you got to have a magnifying glass. It is so small and so thin. Can you imagine having, this is his annual income. Now, he reigns 40 years. And so you multiply that number by 40 and you'll have some idea. In fact, he said the Bible talks about some other things he made. Verse 16, he made shields, and they were 15 pounds each. They were made of pure gold. And then he made, that's the shields, 300 shields, or 4 pounds of gold each. And moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with pure gold. And in the verses that follow, you've got a description of that throne that he sat on. How would you like to have a throne made of ivory? How many elephants does it take to make a throne? And where on earth in Palestine would you find it? Ivory. I mean, you read this, and you, well, I'm going to read a chapter of the Bible tonight. You've got to understand how wealthy he was. I don't know. Well, let's go to the next slide. All the vessels were of gold. And now look at verse 22 of 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 22. The king had merchant ships at sea with a fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the merchant ships came bringing gold and silver and ivory and apes and monkeys. He's got his own zoo. Can you imagine that? He surpassed all the kings of the earth in riches? Yeah, I believe so. And wisdom. And every man brought him presents, down verse 25, and they gave him to them. Go to the next slide, and it gives you some more indication. Solomon had horses imported from Egypt, down in verse 28. The king's merchants brought them in Kiveh at the current price, and there's the price and the chariots that he had. That's enough about Solomon. Now, you can read those chapters there, and you will be fascinated. The statement in this discussion says that silver was worthless. That's how much silver he had. I mean, you start getting, what was that, 600? You get 25 tons of gold. Where are you going to keep 25 tons of gold? And you do that every year. You know, I mean, what's 4 times 25? Is that 100? Add another zero. You've got 1,000 tons of gold. He had almost all the gold there'd be in the world, and he overlaid everything in the temple. We talked about that last week. It said silver was worthless. That's just how much he had. And you read that in the text, and you can get that. You don't need the Deaf Bible to read that. It was worthless. I mean, it was just so common. And if they've got that much gold. Okay. Look at what happened to Solomon. And I'm not putting these verses. You'll need your Bible. Look at 1 Kings. In 1 Kings, you read about the downfall of Solomon. And it's tragic how it came about, because the first part of the reign of Solomon, the grandeur is just unbelievable. You've got the Queen of Sheba that comes. That's Saudi Arabia. Look at the news tonight. She came from all the way from Saudi Arabia all the way up to Jerusalem, and she brought him treasures. And she said about the wisdom of Solomon, the half has not yet been told. He seemed twice as smart as I thought he was. But then in chapter 11, King Solomon, well, loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh. Now, in that description back there of the temple, you've got the building he built that was called the Temple of the Forest. He built that, and he built a house of grandeur for the daughter of Pharaoh. I don't know what he built for the 699, but it says the daughters of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Sidonians, and the Hittites. from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. How emphatic is that? You get a chance to teach the teens. You want to talk to your children, to your grandchildren. You want to talk to your little children that are 6 or 7 years of age. You can teach them this principle. And just talk about, just look at church. Look at that man and that woman. Look at them and how much they love each other. I bet they're really, really happy. You know what? The best thing makes them happy, they're both Christians. And it's here. Now, here's the wisest man that ever lived. And God said, you shall not intermarry with them. And Solomon said, oh, the Bible is so hard to understand. And somebody else said, well, that's just your interpretation. It's not an interpretation. That's a quotation. How difficult is it? Well, Solomon did it once. How many times did he ignore what God said? It's the verse we skipped. 700 times. When I read that number, my mind is not big enough to comprehend. To comprehend what happened. You remember how difficult it was to have a wedding ceremony? Your wife wanted everything. And it just took a year of your life while she planned that wedding, got it all laid out. And it took a year. Well, if you marry 700 women, you got to live 700 years. How many years you have to live to get 700 wives? Well, he reigned 40 years. Is 40 into 700, you know? Is it 20 weddings a year or something like that? Almost 20 weddings a year. That's one a month. That's one every 3 weeks. I mean, I'm trying to do the math inside my head and just rough it out and everything. All he did is go to marriage ceremonies. And then he has the other women with whom he can have sex. They're not involved in the inheritance. They're called concubines. Little boys and girl was trying to make a valentine for his sweetheart, and he made one. He found the word in the Bible, and he made it and said, I will be, you know, a little girl said this, I will be your concubine if you'll be my valentine, or something like that, okay? Well, it's just their wives. He's got 1,000 wives. How'd you like it? Do you know all the name of all the, you? How many children you got? You know, can you remember all their names? What about grandchildren? Got all their names? I don't know where. How many people work at the office with you? How many names do you know? What if you had to remember the names of 1,000 different women? You know what's worse than that? Remembering where their birthday was. A 1,000 wives. How many birthdays you have? How many days in a year? Well, I want you to do something special for me on my birthday. Okay? I've got you booked from 8 till 11, okay? I'll do something special. This to me is really, really one of the more remarkable things. And then he says, surely they will turn away your hearts. How strong is the word surely? They will turn away your heart. And if there's anything we need to teach our children, is to marry somebody to help you go to heaven. You marry somebody that's not a Christian, and you'll have to drag them to church if they want to go. But if it's important for you and they want to come back and get at you, well, I'm not going to go today because you didn't have supper ready on time this one night this week. If you marry a child of the devil, you're going to have problems with your father-in-law. That's amazing. I miss Bretha and Henry, don't you? Bretha and Henry, is this their pew sat right in here? Married 70 plus years. That's an amazing thing to be married that long. And I miss them. And they loved each other. They really, really loved each other. And you can say to your grandchild, look at those two up there. They're both Christians. And look what they're doing. Because if you marry somebody that's not a Christian and they're having Mission Sunday down at church, you've got a problem. You've got a problem with contributions. Now then, you've really got problems when you talk about raising children. Pam Stevens is a name you won't recognize her, one of the early converts in the work in New Zealand. And he wanted his 4 and 5 year old child to start drinking beer. Here's Pam. Her husband would say to her little boy, are you going to church with mommy this morning or you want to go fishing with me? That's extreme. But you'll have a crisis every week if you marry somebody that's not a Christian. Well, I think he'll be, he said after we get married, he'll become a Christian. Well, he might get baptized, but I don't teach your child just to marry somebody that's, you know, they meet at church. Teach him to marry somebody that's a faithful Christian. A faithful Christian. And all you've got to do is just open your eyes and see the impact this has on children and everything. Far more than half of our young people in this very church come from a home where there's only one parent that's a Christian. That's tough. Well, if it won't happen to me, let me tell you something. The altar will not alter him. Isn't that amazing? And you need to talk to them, put some wisdom in their heads about courtship. What's courtship in America? Well, this weekend we're going to go to Disney. And next week we're going to go to SeaWorld, and then we're going to go over to Busch Gardens. And so your whole courtship is going out and eating at the fanciest restaurants and everything and traveling and doing all of this stuff, and then all of a sudden you get married. And we've only got one car. You understand what I'm talking about? Courtship is the time whenever you get to know each other. I'm not talking physically. I'm talking about You talk seriously. You talk about raising children. If your husband or your wife has a different philosophy about how to raise children, you got a crisis every time your child disobeys you. You got that influence. And I feel sorry for every single mom in this church, and we've got lots of them. But it's really, really impossible. And so it says, he had 700 wives. That's in verse 3. They were princesses. I think that means she was probably pretty. 300 concubines, and his wife turned away his heart. When Solomon was old, his wife turned his heart after other gods, and his children were not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. That's amazing. And his heart was not loyal. I said added children because that's the point I want to make. You're married to a daughter of Pharaoh or a princess from Sidon. What's your children going to be like? And then look what says the next verse. Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and did not fully follow the Lord as did his father. Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hills of the east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the people of the Ammonites. Molech, who's that? Well, a god that comes from the Ammonites. What's it like? It was like a bull, Texas Longhorn. I don't know. You, but it had human hands. And the human hands, not the legs of a lion or a bull, but human hands that came out. And he was made of metal, and he was hollow inside. And they would start a great, great fire and heat up that idol until it was glowing red hot. And those who worshiped their God would literally bring their children and put them in the hands of that bull, Molech. I've got every time the word Molech is found on the board here. Leviticus, you shall not let any of your descendants pass through the fire to Molech. Don't do it. And then he says, Deuteronomy, it's for they ever get the promised land. Both of these passages are, there shall not be found anyone among you that does that. You begin looking at all of these times. Look down at 2 Kings chapter 17. He caused their sons and daughters to pass through the fire. You know who we're reading about this? The kings of Israel. So we got the king himself that worships this idol, Molech. And so whenever you read the expression, pass through the fire, that's why sometimes it's just stated. I believe I've got another slide, do I not, after that? That is on the worship of Molech. But I just wanted you to see how many times. Look at that next slide. 2 Chronicles 36, 2, or 36, 33, 6. He caused his sons to pass through the fire in the valley of the sons of Hinnom. You know where that is? Hinnom. It's on the south wall of Jerusalem. There's a valley there. Jerusalem built on seven mountains, and here is this valley that is there, the Valley of Hinnom. If I tell you the word for valley is Gay. Gay Hinnom. Ever heard anything sort of sounds like that in a Bible study? It's a Greek word. To take Gay Hinnom into Greek, Gehenna. Now, when the Jews came back from captivity, they were not idolaters. Came back from Babylon captivity. Idolatry is not a New Testament problem in Jerusalem among the Jews. So out at that place where they'd had the fires burning to burn their children, it became the garbage dump. And everything that was trash, anything they wanted, dead animals and everything, they carried it out and put it in the Valley of Hinnom. Now, out there, you'd have insects would come and lie on those carcasses. There were fires to burn them. And Jesus introduces a new word. They knew what Gehenna was. But he talks about an eternal Gehenna, where the worm does not die. Maggots. You know how that word's translated? Hell. And so whenever Jesus talked about hell, he's the one who uses it. Every time the word Gehenna is found in the Bible, except once in the book of James, where the tongue is set on fire by Gehenna. Every time that word is found in the Bible, it's Jesus, the Son of God, talking about an eternal Gehenna. Be better to cut off your hands than to have a whole body cast into Gehenna. Over and over, every time you see the word hell in relationship to the final destiny of the wicked, it is Jesus who talks about an eternal Gehenna. And the fire is unquenchable. The fire's in the Valley of Hinnom. Good rainstorm would come along and put fire out. But that's not the situation. There is an eternal Gehenna where there's torment forever and ever. Where'd that come from? The sin of Solomon. Sons and daughters laid out there. That's how captivating false doctrine can be. That's it for tonight. I think I heard the second bell, didn't I? So we need to stop. Not a good stopping place, but we're stopping.